upper part of the picture. So these are basically parallelograms. You have to normalize them to have area 1, and so any parallelogram has side identifications, two side identifications, and I also mark two of its closed curves, one by red, one by blue, and I'm assuming that we have to go counterclockwise in an angle less than pi to get from red to blue. And if we do that, we basically get a model of hyperbolic plane. These are the points of the that model. You have to say what things are identified with each other. So, for example, the parallelogram on the upper left looks like the parallelogram on the upper lower right in here, but they are not the same because obviously the angle made between red and blue is different. Whereas the square on the middle left is the same as the other square on the upper right, because they're basically the same. You have this horizontal foliation, which basically serves as a point in the unit tangent bundle. You can start deforming your surface by stretching along that foliation and squeezing along the perpendicular foliation. So, for example, this one is obtained from this one by doing that. And these foliations are quite important in a sense. You can also identify the boundary of the hyperbolic plane with the space of these foliations topologically. You can basically see that if your tori are degenerating, they're degenerating in certain direction. And there's a very nice definition of how to define a limiting process, which is a good exercise for anyone who wants to understand Thurston's notion of the boundary of Titan space. So you may also want to see which one of these torus are basically isometric. So there are these automorphisms that can be defined by global affine maps. Like when you apply that matrix to this square, you get this other one, and it would be basically like, so I made a mistake here. This has to be going around once. This is like doing one whole twist. So disregard this part of the picture. But the tori are going to be isometric. And what I want to do, I want to look at all the possible matrices I get and look at the corresponding Möbius map. So this is a Möbius map corresponding with this matrix. And for all such automorphisms, you get a group. In fact, you get a since these matrices act on the hyperbolic plane described in the above way, any such automorphism acts as an isometry on this hyperbolic plane. So you, in fact, get a Fuchsian group. Well, this is the story for torus. One would want to do this for other surfaces. Obviously, we know that the Teichmuller space of heterogeneous surfaces is not hyperbolic, so there's no hope for getting a picture this nice, but you may repeat some of the ideas and get slices inside the Teichmuller space which behave similarly. So here are the official definitions. So there's a term, singular translation surface. It is basically a surface equipped with an atlas of charts such that any transition map is in the form either z goes to z plus a complex number or minus z plus a complex number. And since any such thing actually implies the existence of a globally defined foliation, you cannot have that in all points. So you may want to have a few singularities with cone angle multiple of pi. The reason you want multiple of pi is that you still want to be able to foliate the surface in any direction. So let me give an example of a translation surface. The way most people think about them is this is a really general sort of translation surface. So you start with a polygon, and you can identify any portion of a side with certain length with another side which is parallel to that of the same length by translation. So I'm gluing red to red, I'm gluing green to green, and I can't glue the purple to anything, but what I can do is that I can identify any point here to the point opposite. So it's like doing this, And after doing some of these things, you actually have done identifications all over the place. Well, this defines a nice natural chart inside the polygon and also on the sides. You have to be careful what happens at the singular points, but if you have done it in the way I just said, and you go around basically find the angle at each of these points, the cone angle, it will automatically be a multiple of pi. And then the space I'm interested in, the hyperbolic disk, would be just deform this polygon applying an affine map, which actually has area 1, an element of SL2R, an area preserving affine map, and you may get other polygons. So each of them defines a new surface. This defines a two-dimensional slice inside the Teichmuller space of this particular surface, which I think is 4 times Poincaré torus. And with the Teichmuller metric, this is, in fact, isometric to the hyperbolic plane. So these are hyperbolic slices inside a very non-hyperbolic space. Back to definitions. So I'm assuming all these translation surfaces have area 1. And you can basically apply a fixed affine map to the chart maps to get new surfaces the way I just described. This is the, if you knew the polygonal basically representation of your surface, you could just apply the affine map globally on your polygon and do the new identifications. But in terms of charts, this is how you define it. And then the disk will be, look at the action of all elements in SL2R. You don't want to look at the action of elements in the orthogonal group. That would be like the rotation, as we said before. It doesn't really do any deformation. So, and you have to, actually, I forgot to mention the metric. What makes this space hyperbolic is the Teichmuller metric, which in this case can be described very easily. You look at, for 2 points in this disk, you have 2 affine maps, and you look at the composition of one with the inverse of the other one. You look at the dilatation of this affine map and take 1/2 log of that. This will be the distance. This is the hyperbolic distance. As I said before, the boundary corresponds with these foliations, with the straight lines you get in different directions. That is a circle of directions. And I'm interested in looking at the automorphisms of these surfaces, which are basically in the local charts we have defined by affine maps. So there is a structure on the surface, which is this translation structure. I'm looking at maps which don't necessarily preserve that structure. They're not isometries, but in local charts, they look affine. And once you get that, since the area is preserved, it is finite, it is preserved. In fact, there is a well-defined matrix associated with any such automorphism, which will be in SL2R. You can project it to PSL2R, and you can look at the quotient of the disk I just described by all such images to get some sort of quotient space. What makes this construction important is that you have these so-called Teichmuller disks, and then you are interested in going to modular space and see where they project to. And typically, in fact, this two-dimensional disk is going to be dense in this multi-dimensional Teichmuller space, but occasionally it happens that you get a nice quotient. You get, in fact, a surface inside the Teichmuller space. And so let me mention one example. So maybe I want to hide part of this. So this is the octagon, and in fact, the reason Veach studied this surface, the octagonal surface of genus 2, was to, the main motivation comes from billiard. So you have to consider the certain triangular billiard table, and this is the triangle that you get inside this octagon as the shaded region. And by doing some sort of tiling, you actually get an octagonal surface and do opposite side pairings to get a surface, translation surface. The reason it is important is that looking at trajectories of a bell yard and closed trajectories there, they correspond to closed geodesics in the translation surface. So this is one closed trajectory on the bell yard table. Actually, in 2 points, we hit the hypotenuse of the triangle in the right angle, so it hits back with the same angle. And that corresponds with the blue geodesic that I have drawn. Well, the surface has just one singularity, and so all these slices go around, and then the lower one, which is gray, has to be glued back to the upper one, and that way you get a cone of angle 6 pi. That's how the structure looks like around that vertex, which is just one point. All vertices are just one point, and everywhere else it is really flat, like a neighborhood in the Euclidean plane. Well, like in the previous example that I put up here, you can't usually detect any automorphisms. It's hard to realize an automorphism, a homeomorphism of the surface as a globally defined affine map. But in this case, in fact, we can do that. So what happens is that there are two cylinders inside this surface, the yellow one. So this is identified with this. That's one cylinder. And the green one, and you can easily check that this cylinder is twice as long as this one. So that means that if we apply the map, which affine map, which does one Dane twist around this one, it will do two Dane twists around this one. And that globally defines a map, which is the homeomorphism, two Dane twists around this core curve and one Dane twist around the core curve, which is this one. And then Veach proved that, well, there's another obvious one, which is just rotating the 8 degree, order 8 rotation that induces a homeomorphism. And then there is a group generated by these two. Luckily, this group is huge. So when you have a huge group, you can actually see if you can make it any larger or not. So this group is really large. So we start some sort of argument to show that there is nothing else. This is the actual automorphism group. And this is very rare. In most cases, if someone hands you over a translation surface, you cannot prove anything, basically. You may be able to find some automorphisms, but then you can't say if this, what is the actual automorphism group, what, the full automorphism group. Okay, so in this case, in fact, you get a lattice. So this is Veach's theorem that only when you get a lattice, you get something which is closed inside. So here, you get something with cusps inside inside the modular space. And these are very important slices inside the modular space. It's called Veach surfaces. Yeah. Okay, so... Well, there has been a lot of work on the possibilities for these groups from different aspects for compact surfaces. Today I want to mention some of the work I did to generate examples with infinite topology. So there are two basic constructions, and I'm going through the first one. So you can always hope for generating something with parabolic automorphisms, which are more like these Dane twists, or you can hope for something which is pseudo-Anosov, which is stretching in one direction and squeezing in another direction. And typically, it is harder to deal with pseudo-Anosov. So originally, in finite type case, there is a construction due to Terston, which starts with two parabolics. So you start with two multi-twists, and composition will be a pseudo-Anosov. I'm going to just use this notation. Anytime, if you hope for two different parabolics which are not in the same, with eigenvectors in different directions, then in fact you can apply an affine map and assume that the maps are in the given form. One of them is PH and the other one is PV. And the composition of one with the other one will be hyperbolic if this parameter A is greater than 4, in which case the quotient surface will look like surface of genus 0 with two cusps and one horn. And the limiting case is when A is equal to 4, when you actually get twice punctured a sphere. And if A is less than 4, you get a surface with one cone singularity and two cusps, which is the case with the torus. Geometrically, this is not a correct picture, unlike the one on the first slide. So geometrically, what the first one does, the PH does, is that it takes some horizontal cylinders and it does one Dehn, full Dehn twist on each of them. And PV is supposed to do full Dehn twist on some vertical cylinders, which should be inside your surface like this. So the idea is to basically make up a surface out of these cylinders, which basically will have the moduli prescribed by this parameter A. And if you do it carefully, they basically patch together, give you a full surface, a finite area that's very important, which will have a fairly large automorphism group. So I'm going to describe how you get some sort of characteristic polynomial which gives you possible surfaces. The rectangle in the first rectangle on the upper left is supposed to be a vertical, a horizontal cylinder, so there are identifications of the right modulus for the horizontal Dehn twist. And then you want a green vertical cylinder to go through that, and so that will prescribe certain length x0 alpha on the width of this rectangle. You may get a little bit more ambitious and try to actually put this cylinder in such a way that it goes through, and then what is left over will be exactly enough for having one horizontal cylinder. So that will be the length I basically denote by x1 alpha, and then you can keep going. Like, I place this cylinder, and then I run through that a horizontal cylinder, and what is left will be what I run through a vertical cylinder, and what is left is exactly a horizontal cylinder of the right side. So every time, in fact, you can keep doing this until there's a limiting situation. These numbers are, in fact, there's a nice geometric argument that says if you start with this map, R alpha x, ax minus 1 over ax, and so x I alpha will be, in fact, the x n alpha will be the nth inverse image of x0 under this map. So, and this is a Möbius map. It has a unique attracting fixed point, which is 1 over alpha plus 1. That will be exactly the number you should put in here in order to build up this infinite tower. The infinite tower of, so all these vertical cylinders have the same modulus, and all these horizontal cylinders also have the same modulus. The only problem to define a globally defined map on this surface is on the white part. So you have to take care of it. So what you can do, for example, is you can consider the equation that gives you the right number so that you have one infinite tower on the, and on the leftover piece, you have some number of vertical cylinders. That would be the equation x infinity alpha, which was the unique fixed point of that map, plus some n times x0 of alpha equals exactly this length, which is normalized to be 1. And if you work with three vertical cylinders, you get alpha equals 2. I'm going to back to this particular surface later. It's kind of a very important one. And so you get actually some examples for any at least equal to 2. If n is equal to 2, what you get is going to have infinite area. So it won't be actually an interesting example. And in fact, it will be an infinite covering of the torus. So it is important to keep in mind we are interested in finite area examples, because infinite area examples, actually you can make them very cheaply by just considering infinite coverings of the examples you have in finite case. Okay, so let me give a few more examples. So then you can also consider like putting, just covering the base horizontal cylinder by some number of infinite towers. And that again gives you some examples, which are related to examples previously I previously described by some coverings. So this won't be that much of new stuff. This slide actually is a good one to describe how you write this characteristic polynomial, basically. So over there you have an infinite tower coming to a vertical cylinder that would be together with one horizontal cylinder filling up the vertical cylinder. So that is the R alpha inverse part in the equation I write. And then in the base part, so you bring that all on the base horizontal cylinder, and then you have two additional basically zero type vertical cylinders to go with that. The sum has to be equal to one. So for the point I want to make in here is that you prescribe the combinatorics of how these cylinders are entangled, and that gives you a polynomial. There will be a unique root that basically gives you the geometric configuration that realizes it. So combinatorics gives you an actual geometric picture of this translation surface. Here are other examples. In all these cases, in fact, what happens is the following. So here is the theorem. Well, definition and then theorem. So definition is basically saying formally what it means to have an infinite tower without having done it in that specific way. So there will be some vertical cylinders and some horizontal cylinders, and each of them basically intersects. Each horizontal intersects two verticals and is filled by that, and each horizontal is intersected by two horizontals, and basically that's it. If you have that sub-pattern, all these have the same moduli, then what happens is that, okay, you can define... So the point is that I should have said something in between, but so suppose you could define actually the two parabolics all over the place. You could fill in the void part in a nice way, and you had PH and PV defining automorphisms, then your automorphism group would at least contain PV and PH and the group generated by them. The theorem basically says that that is it, that's all you get. And it is actually saying that even if you don't have these parabolics realized, that any group you get as of automorphisms will be inside this group. So it's somehow a tool to make sure that you have got all of the automorphism group. It tells you where to look for automorphism groups as long as you have one of these infinite towers inside. So in particular, what you get in all these cases is going to be a surface with two punctures and one horn. There's still a lot more room for adding new automorphisms, and it is telling you no, there's no. This is all you can get. The only additional automorphism you may get is the elliptic one that switches the two cusps. So your automorphism group is either the group generated by these two parabolics or the group generated by the two together with one involution. So. The idea of the proof, part of the proof, is kind of interesting. It goes back to understanding the action of these automorphisms on the boundary of this hyperbolic plane disk that I talked about. The main point is that you have these cylinders which have the same moduli, and then you have, if you go inside the direction, I have to mention one thing in here. It's part of the picture. There's this red line and there's this blue line, and it gives you a cone of rays in between. The point is that there is no limit point of any additional, fixed point of any additional automorphism in this interval of rays, which corresponds with the boundary of the horn. And the reason that is true is, goes back to some knowledge of how Fuchsian groups act, and all these cylinders have the same moduli, but if you run through this ray of directions, this cone of directions, you would end up with cylinders which are basically longer and longer, you know, depending on how you call something long. It's either wider or wider or longer or longer. Okay, any questions so far? Okay, what seems actually more interesting to me, let's go back to one of the examples I put up before. So this is one actual example. I kind of rushed through to get to the main theorem, which was, we know the actual automorphism group for this. It's a free group generated by two parabolics. But typically, the interesting automorphisms are the pseudo-Anosov's ones, the ones for which the affine map has two eigenvalues, two distinct eigenvalues. So in this case, there's a nice description of what happens if we first do the horizontal twist and then do the vertical twist. So I'm going to use a different normalization of the picture. It's just application of an affine map. So you figure that the eigendirections of this composition map, which is hyperbolic, are the red line and the blue line. And then you cut through those, and then you basically re-glue according to the identifications you have. You get some sort of a parallelogram, and then you apply an affine map to turn that into a square. What happens is you get this the following surface. You have a square, and so this is unit square, so this is 1/2, 1/4, 1/8, and there are two points of accumulation on these two opposite vertices, and I'm identifying this with this, this with this, this with this, and so on, this with this, this with this. And this way I'm getting a surface of infinite genus with one end, and the nice thing is that, in fact, this pseudo-Anosov of the hyperbolic automorphism has a very nice description. In fact, it is very hard to describe any pseudo-Anosov map for surfaces of finite type. I mean, you can use Markov partitions and they give you a nice description, but typically you don't get a picture as simple as the one you get for this one. So the one I'm interested in right now is the top ones, which is this one. With those identifications, I'm stretching in the horizontal direction and squeezing in the vertical direction. The picture turns into the middle picture. Then you cut through the middle vertical line, and then there is already an identification of this side with this side. So you do that identification, and you get back to the original picture. Okay, it's always something on one side with something of the same length on the opposite side, and that uniquely tells you what the identifications are. So this is basically the Baker map, but it is inducing a map on the surface of infinite genus. And in fact, some other examples lead to if you change some of the parameters in this example, you would get one which has stretching factor 3. For that, you would have to use 1/3, 1/9, 1/27, and you have to stretch by factor 3 and then cut into three pieces and reassemble to get the same picture. And identifications respect this. In fact, there's a nice picture of how the Dane twist acts in this square picture as well. So, but what is actually interesting in this case, it is very hard to talk about pseudo-Anosovs in surfaces of infinite type. There are some simple ones on this surface, which is the one I just described and conjugates of this under the conjugation with these parabolics. There are also some that are very mysterious, and I don't really know anything about them. So, one thing that doesn't typically happen, doesn't happen in the surfaces of finite type, is that you don't have saddle connections in the stable directions, and here you do. So there are some. If we go back to stable direction of, so any of these pseudo-Anosovs correspond with one closed curve on this surface. So the closed curve that gives us the one I just explained is actually this one, the closed curve homotropic to the boundary horn. But there are some other closed curves in here, and they have their own pseudo-Anisimov representative. And if you try to track them, what it does on this square picture, it's really complicated. I actually don't know if there's any nice Markov partition for that or not. So, but there are definitely the very first examples to be considered if anyone is interested in surfaces of infinite time. Yes. So there is this surface, and it has its own mapping class group. The surface is a surface of infinite genus with one end. And I have one representative, so the Tarkovian space is everything that is quasi-conformally equivalent to that. So, but the Tarkovian space is huge. I'm just looking at what is called the Tarkovian disk, which is complex geodesic inside the Tarkovian space. So it's actually not the Tarkovian space of torus because you don't have the elliptics. So it's free. Unlike the, so when you do the two dangerous on the torus, you actually end up with some elliptic elements. And you don't in here. So this is the picture you don't get for torus. You get something which is not even here. It would be that you have this kind of, well. Exactly. Okay, so let me try to give one more example. Which is actually my favorite. Let's just do the top one. Well, this is one infinite tower, another infinite tower, and just one vertical cylinder, and they fill up everything. They give you the whole surface. And if you solve the characteristic polynomial for this, you get the golden ratio for the factor of the pseudo-Anisimov. And so this is, in fact, the next example, which is not in the previous family, and it's simple enough to be considered. And once again, you can try to cut it. And so one thing actually you would notice is the factors you get for these pseudo-Anisimovs are numbers that people who have worked with Markov partitions have seen a lot. So you would wonder if something finite is going on. So because this surface has infinite topology, but it could still be that you have a finite description of what is going on, like in the previous example. So the trick is to just cut through the stable and unstable direction of the pseudo-Anisimov, which you know where they are, and then again re-glue back everything, and this time it won't be a nice square, it will be a union of rectangles, which will actually serve as a Markov partition, and then you can see what exactly the pseudo-Anisimov is doing. So it's still a little bit hard to see what happens, but so for example, on the orange piece rectangle, you're stretching and you're squeezing. The factors are the golden ratio and its inverse. So this goes here after you do that, and this goes over here, and this is in two pieces in here. And again, there is some sort of combinatorial picture which tells you what is going on combinatorially. There is a graph endomorphism which actually describes this pseudo-Anisimov. And so I have tried to draw that. This, in fact, is quite general. So you can start with a graph endomorphism. It has to be a thick graph endomorphism. This is like sort of a thing you... So it has to have some conditions which for all the people in here who are familiar with Hubbard trees are exactly the same. And if you start with that data, you can construct a surface, a translation surface. It supports a pseudo-Anisimov map. And generically, the surface will be of infinite type, although actually there is a very precise description of when it will be of finite type by Toby Hall, but I'm not talking about that now. So the simplest example would be, actually the second simplest example would be just to start with the map of interwoven with two, you know, the two edges. And this is the endomorphism I'm looking at. And then you try to realize each of these edges as one rectangle for your Markov partition. And in this case, you can actually do it by hand, and you get the actual factors and sizes of these intervals so that you get a surface so that it supports Suganosov. In this case, since you have a tree, your final surface will be of genus zero. So it is a surface on this sphere. You can with infinitely many punctures, you can show that the surface is actually a sphere, meaning that these removed points converge to a point, and they don't converge to some sort of a hole. So that's kind of important. You need some sort of extremal length argument to show that. And so this is the surface. What happens, though is that in this case, you don't get a large automorphism group. Well, I actually don't know what is the automorphism group. What I can prove is that the automorphism group does not contain any parabolics. So it's very mixed behavior. In case of finite type surfaces, people even didn't know if there are such examples. In fact, the first thing you try to do when you look for automorphisms is to look for parabolics, because they're easier to understand. So recently, there were examples that people could show they don't have any parabolics. They're purely hyperbolic. And this is one such example for surfaces of infinite type. And one can show that there are no parabolics in here. One interesting problem is that what is the automorphism group? Is there anything else except for the cyclic group generated by this pseudo-Anosov or not? And I think that would be a very hard sort of question to try to answer. Even in the surface of finite type, this has been long open. People don't know if there are any Teichmuller disks whose stabilizers and mapping class group is just cyclic pseudo-Anosov. That's still open. Okay. Another thing that was not known until recently for surfaces of finite type was if these groups can be infinitely generated. And now the picture actually people have is that generically they are. So in the beginning, I think people thought these groups are either based more or less PSL2Z. I mean, you either have to start with something which is more or less finite covering of a torus, or there is nothing else. Then Veach came up with those examples, and they realized there are lattices which are not constructed that way. And so as time is going, people are getting more and more examples and more possibilities for what can happen. For surfaces of infinite type, it may sound kind of easier to try to find an infinitely generated automorphism group, but actually it's kind of tricky. So the example I just discussed with factor 1/2 could be done with any other number. So it's square of side length 1, and then you look at number alpha less than 1, and so segment of length alpha, segment alpha squared, alpha cubed, and you just mark these points, and you do it in the opposite order on the opposite side, and then you do the side identification. It's the same with this one and this one. So you get the surface. In cases where alpha is 1 over n, as I said before, you actually get this free group generated by two parabolics, and the pseudo-Anosov, which is the composition of the two, will have stretching factor n for alpha equals 1 over n. If alpha is rational but not equal to 1 over n, there is no pseudo-Anosov. You can actually check it that the way I was trying to show a pseudo-Anosov, it doesn't work. So there won't be a pseudo-Anosov in the with the stable directions and the direction of sides of this square. So what one would wonder, what is the automorphism group? You still have the interests. In fact, if you start with any direction from this vertex to any of the vertices on the opposite side, any of the marked points on the opposite side, and then try to basically draw lines in that same direction, there will be certain cylinders, like this is one cylinder and it continues over here, goes up and closes. So there will be, in fact, infinitely many cylinders with the same moduli, and there will be a middle part. And in the middle part, you get, again, finite number of cylinders with moduli, which are rational multiples of the modulus of any of these cylinders. So you can actually, by the same trick as the one for the octagon, you can, in fact, define a global affine automorphism, which will do certain number of chain twists on each of these cylinders. The point is that geometrically you can show that the so if you list the moduli of these cylinders, that's the way to show that these parabolics that you get are not conjugate. So the group you get is infinitely generated because you get infinitely many parabolics which cannot be conjugated. And the way you show that is by showing that the cylinders that you get give you basically a spectrum of length, moduli that cannot be matched with each other through affine mass. And so that's the basic idea. So for any alpha which is rational but not equal to 1 over n, the automorphism group in this case will be infinitely generated. The quotient surface you get inside the Teichmuller disk will have infinitely many cusps. Okay, questions? And one other thing you can try to do is, so as I explained, there are two different ways to look for these surfaces. One is to start with the cylinder sort of construction, start with two parabolics and try to define them so that they generate a group. The other way is the direct way of defining a pseudo-anisotropy, which is more complicated. And as I said, you can do it for any graph map. So one would try to look for example, unimodal graph maps, like, you know, just these are maps of intervals. So you just have intervals with finitely many points and you go over it in some pattern and it defines basically some sort of graph endomorphism. Then you get a surface, and I've zoomed in just part of that surface. What happens is that typically you get this pattern. This is the pattern that if you start with almost every example of unimodal endomorphism of just segment, you will end up with that sub-pattern inside your translation surface. What happens is that you end up with any direction you take, you will end up with cylinders that have to become basically wider and wider. And so exactly by the same reasoning as I mentioned before, which I didn't actually go through the details of it, you could say that there are no parabolics. So generically, if you start with any graph endomorphism and you try to realize it as a surface supporting a pseudo-anisotropy, that surface won't have any parabolic automorphism. So again, typically it seems that having parabolics is going to be a very non-generic sort of situation. Okay, let me just put up some questions, and that would be probably my last slide. One is that what kind of factors we can get through this construction, meaning we got these surfaces, there's this generalized Thurston construction, and you start with two parabolics, you end up with a free group generated by the two parabolics. So there is a pseudo-anisotropy and it has a stretching factor alpha. What numbers are realized? They're definitely algebraic by the construction, but what are other restrictions? So the second question is that you have this construction which starts with a thick graph endomorphism, gives you a translation surface with pseudo-Anosov. Typically, as I mentioned, you don't really you don't get Pearson examples out of that. But in all the Pearson examples that I mentioned, you actually get something which is obtained through this graph endomorphism construction. So what are the combinatorial criteria on the graph endomorphism to give you a surface which is a Pearson example, basically? And I basically presented at least two examples with the same automorphism groups. In the case of surfaces of finite type, there is a theorem by Godkin and George that states that, for example, if you have affine automorphism group, which up to finite covering is automorphism group of torus, in fact, what you have is a branch covering of torus. So there is a theorem that says if the automorphism group is large and it is in certain it is of certain type, then you actually can recover the geometry of your surface up to some finite covering. So the question is, what would be, is there anything like that for surface of infinite type or not? And the final question, which I think is quite interesting, is still there is no example where the automorphism group is of first kind, a Fuchsian group of first kind, meaning that the limit set is the whole circle. In all the examples I just described, there are some intervals of discontinuity in the circle. And my conjecture is that that is not possible, but I don't have any proof for that. Okay.